we're talking hundreds of thousands of people who have died. These are extra deaths that have just suddenly popped up, you know, and we're supposed to go, go for a run or, donate money to this or that and find a cure when what we really should be looking at is the cause.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome, friends. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com, July 3rd, 2016. And yes, it is the summer, so if you notice the sweat dripping down my face during this conversation, if you happen to be watching the video version, don't worry, I'm not having a heart attack. All right, so that out of the way, today we're going to be talking about a topic that is extremely interesting and extremely controversial, and it goes by many names, and people may have heard of highfalutin talk about geoengineering of stratospheric aerosol injections for solar radiation management and other such techno-babble and gobbledygook, or they may have heard the much more common phrase chemtrails. Either way, that's the subject of today's conversation. We're going to be bringing on a guest that we've had on a couple of times in Corbett Report history, so you can search the archives for it. Of course, the links will be in the show notes to our previous conversations with Peter A. Kirby, and he has written a new book called Chemtrails Exposed, A New Manhattan Project, which is available for sale at Amazon. He is at peteracurby.com. Again, links in the show notes. Peter, thank you for joining us once again on the Corbett Report.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, as I say, this is our third conversation. But for those who haven't caught the first two conversations or need a refresher, perhaps you can just tell us again who you are, where you come from, why you got interested in this subject, and why you wrote the book.
Yeah, I'm basically nobody. I started by just getting interested in the issue and then going online and posting things on forums and comment sections and wherever I could. And I also did an investigation locally statewide into the California Air Resources Board. So I was kind of laying the foundation for this book starting about 5 or 6 years ago. Because right off the top, I knew that there were some things that should be looked into immediately. I mean, you know, there are state agencies, namely the California Air Resources Board, who should be on top of this situation. But, you know, that takes months to contact them and have them contact you back and find the right people and all this stuff. But anyway, I was eventually able to cobble together something Michael at Activist Post picked up on. I think he basically found me posting things in a comment section or a forum somewhere, and he went ahead and published the thing that I had written in the forum. I didn't even know that he had done it at the time. It was some months later that I figured out that he had published it, and then from there I began submitting articles directly to Activist Post, and he's been publishing me ever since. And largely what's in the book is a compilation and a condensation of all the articles that I've been posting on Activist Post over the last 5 or 6 years.
All right, this is obviously to do with the subject of chemtrails, or what is being sprayed in the skies overhead that most people have observed at this point, at one point or another, the crisscross patterns in the sky after, a full day of spraying that gradually turn into cloud banks that often will completely cover the horizon, horizon to horizon. This phenomenon, obviously, as I say, is controversial because it does stretch the bonds of credulity for most people when they encounter this idea. And I think there are two ways that people find this incredulous. One is they would find it incredulous that people in government or corporations or military or intelligence agencies or other people who would be situated to do this would do it. And then the other, I think, incredulity that a lot of people have is that they don't think that they could do it. So let's attack those two separate vectors one at a time. And I think the first one, would they do something like this, is something that you lay out extremely well in the first few chapters of this book. You go through so much of the history of this, the development of this idea of weather modification, all of the various proposals that have been talked about, various ways that they have talked about being able to do it, the development of the idea of geoengineering to save us from climate change, etc. Again, there's a lot of documentation that you've dug up on this over the years, but just fortuitously, in the last few days, I noticed that John Brennan, the director of the CIA, was giving a speech at the Council on Foreign Relations, of all places, where he himself was talking about geoengineering. So let's just listen to a little bit of that clip, and perhaps we can use this as a way to broach that subject of, would they really do something like this?
Another example is the array of technologies, often referred to collectively as geoengineering, that potentially could help reverse the warming effects of global climate change. One that has gained my personal attention is stratospheric aerosol injection, or SAI, a method of seeding the stratosphere with particles that can help reflect the sun's heat in much the same way that volcanic eruptions do. On the geopolitical side, the technology's potential to alter weather patterns and benefit certain regions of the world at the expense of other regions could trigger sharp opposition by some nations.
Oh, I'm sorry, is that well-known conspiracy theorist John Brennan talking about altering weather patterns and spraying things in the atmosphere in order to save us from ourselves, apparently? Yes, that's the director of the CIA, and of course that is just, again, just the latest, just in the last few days, piece of evidence on this trail. Perhaps you can set out some of the other pieces of evidence along that trail. Would they do something like this?
Yeah, well, there's, I think, the most significant pieces of evidence as far as would they do something like this are two books. One was written by Dr. Leonard A. Cole called Clouds of Secrecy, and the other one was written by someone named Andrew Golichek, and that's called In the Name of Science. And these two books outline hundreds of open-air testing experiments done covertly against the American people over the last 70 years. So, I mean, there's other, you know, evidence of us being sprayed openly and covertly. And, you know, as far as would they do it, I mean, the evidence shows that, yeah, they would and they have and they are. As far as the CIA goes, they appear to be deeply involved in the New Manhattan Project. Most notably, early on, there are some early documents in 1965. The Office of the Executive Branch of the Federal Government under LBJ released a document called Restoring the Quality of Our Environment. And this document was the earliest top-level document that I've been able to find that states both the theory of man-made global warming and what John Brennan was just talking about, the SRM, solar radiation management spraying of particles, otherwise commonly known as geoengineering. So we're talking a document that came out in 1965. Earlier in that year, although he was not the head of the CIA at the time that it came out in 1965, earlier in 1965, the head of the CIA was none other than Vice Admiral William Raborn, who is clearly has involvement in the development of technologies that have gone into this New Manhattan Project. He looks like one of the main players historically, and he served briefly as the head of the CIA, and he quit before that paper came out in 1965, but earlier in that year he was the head of the CIA. And I probably can't find it right now, but I think it was in 1971. This is in the Information War chapter. The CIA also released a document, and I forget the name of it. The book is absolutely jam-packed with little factoids and information like this, so it's hard for me to bring up the exact title of a lot of these things. I do know a lot of them by heart, but this is not one of them. But I think it was in 1971, the CIA released a document which appears to be the fount of this idea that global warming can cause the end of humanity. You know, we hear this type of stuff in the media, and people repeat it about how, well, you know, the temperature is going to go up, and then that's going to cause nations to, you know, run out of food, and then there are going to be riots, and then there's going to be war, and, you know, they're going to have to invade other countries, and then this is all going to lead to nuclear war and all this stuff. This was all outlined it looks to me originally in a CIA document that I think came out, it was either 1971 or 1974. And ever since then, you know, this has been used as a justification for for spraying us, because they're saying, you know, hey, we don't want global warming to happen. You know, the CIA repeatedly issued lots of reports saying, you know, global warming would be terrible, and, you know, we don't want global warming to happen. So, you know, if we spray stuff out of planes, you're going to be great. And this idea of spraying stuff out of planes, the earliest mention, first of all, the earliest mention of the theory of man-made global warming that I've been able to find is in 1958. That was a big year. Lots of this type of information was coming out then. In 1958, weather modifier Howard T. Orville released an article in Popular Science. I'm looking at it right now instead of looking at the camera, titled "Weather as a Weapon," and this is the earliest mention of the theory of man-made global warming that I've been able to find. So the earliest mention of the theory of man-made global warming appears in an article about weather modification from, at the time, the leading weather modifier, Howard T. Orville, who served as a science advisor to the president. Also in that same year, the solar radiation management geoengineering thesis was unveiled in the most cited report, weather modification report. This was a report titled The Final Report of the Advisory Committee on Weather Control. None other than Bernard Vonnegut, who has been deeply involved in the development of technologies that have gone into the New Manhattan Project, was a co-author of this paper. And the paper reads, "The radiation properties of the atmosphere can be altered by the introduction of gases or aerosols and by cloud seeding." So, you know, the whole idea of the theory of man-made global warming comes from weather modification. All the earliest documents are related to weather modification. Over the years, it was I think in the late 60s and on into the 70s, they started changing the rhetoric from weather to climate, and this is when the atmospheric chemistry idea came in, and the atmospheric chemists, when they started getting more complex with the things they could sense in the atmosphere. It concurrently, they were changing the rhetoric from weather to climate. So, you know, we see the CIA deeply involved, and we also see the very strong, incredibly strong connections between weather modification and the theory of man-made global warming.
I think we should back up for a moment. First of all, I'll direct people to our previous conversation where we talked at length about Bernard Vonnegut and the other people at GE Labs who were foundational in a lot of the technologies for this this modern era of scientific weather manipulation. But let's just back up for a moment. The subtitle and a phrase that you've used a number of times here, New Manhattan Project. I understand this isn't a term that you coined. It is available. It has been used before. But why is that term important for understanding this project?
Well, it came out, this project of weather modification largely came out of the original Manhattan Project. First of all, it is a physics problem, and the people who put together the first atomic bombs were physicists. And just recently, the most recent book I've read, which is not in this first edition of the book, but I'm really seeing that the same people, there's a certain group of scientists who were the most prominent scientists of their time, and they developed the original Manhattan Project. They developed the first atomic bombs, and on into the radiation laboratory at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. They developed also a lot of technology that went into this new Manhattan Project, specifically, as you might assume from the title of the MIT laboratory, the electromagnetic aspects of the new Manhattan Project, not only the radar that is used for over the horizon radar was something that they developed, which is electromagnetic energy, which is bounced off of the ionosphere and is able to remotely sense objects thousands of miles away. That was developed at the radiation laboratory of MIT. And it looks like they were also at MIT deeply involved in the electromagnetic energy development of, things that went into the aircraft control systems that are used today in the new Manhattan Project. It looks like they developed the ability to remotely control airplanes at this laboratory. So there's a group of physicists that appear to have initiated the new Manhattan Project, and that's the connection.
So what is it that we're talking about here? Because when people hear about weather modification, they might think, well, of course, we've had cloud seeding for over half a century now, commercially available. You spray silver iodide, it nucleates and creates rainfall in a given area. We've known about that for a long time. Nothing new here. What is new about the new Manhattan Project aspect of this?
Well, the differences between the original cloud seeding industry, which goes on to this day, and the new Manhattan Project is mostly the fact that that electromagnetic energy is used to disperse the particles that come out of the airplane, and also conventional weather modification is done on a regional basis, and the new Manhattan Project is done on a global basis. And the new Manhattan Project is covert, and the conventional cloud seeding industry has been overt since 1947. It was the same group, the same three scientists from General Electric Laboratories in 1946 that simultaneously launched both of those. So I guess that's another kind of cover for the new Manhattan Project. It's like, oh yeah, we know those scientists. You know, they launched the conventional cloud seeding industry. Yeah, but at the same time, Bernard Vonnegut went on to work with the electrical manipulation of atmospheric particles. And I would assume, although I have not been able to make the connection, the electromagnetic manipulation of atmospheric particles. I hope to make that connection between Vonnegut and those activities in the future.
So what's being suggested here is that there are planes that are spraying whatever chemical cocktail overhead, and there is also ionospheric heaters and other advanced technologies for manipulating those particles once they are released to the end of weather modification?
Yes, and very advanced command and control centers as well.
In what sense, command and control centers?
Well, you would need to know, you would have to have centralized control of these operations. You would need to know where all the planes are at any given time, and be able to direct them to where you need the particles dispersed. You would need to be able to have the supercomputers modeling all the atmospheric models and, keeping track of all the temperature and saturation and humidity and everything in real time. You would need control of the ionospheric heaters and the electromagnetic energy portions of it. You would need a central command where people can oversee the whole project and be able to direct it.
That, of course, leads us into the other aspect of the incredulity. Could they do this? We're talking here, just from what you're saying, at least hundreds, perhaps thousands of aircraft that would be needed for this, and these command and control centers, all of this monitoring, all of the technologies that would go into this, and all of the people involved in all of those technologies. It's a mind-boggling thing, and I understand why a lot of people would say it's just not possible for that to happen. What evidence have you uncovered to suggest that this is happening?
Well, as far as the command and control centers are concerned, those would be relatively easy to hide. We have many very highly secure facilities all over the country, with highly classified activities going on. We have Lawrence Livermore National Labs, which is someplace that I talk about in the book. I've been just recently thinking about NASA Ames Research Center down there on the peninsula. I think they're in Sunnyvale. It's a very well-known common thing that there are certain areas that you don't go to, and you have to have security clearance and all this stuff. I mean, they could be doing anything in there. We don't know. There's all these black budgets. You know, our tax money just goes into a black hole, and they don't have to report on anything. You know, they could have been using black budgets over the decades to fund all this stuff. As far as the airplanes go, which would probably be the most difficult thing to hide, I got my eye on, this is not in the book, I like to speculate more in the interview, I like to go with more stuff I can prove in the book, but I find it fun to do this. There's a certain Air Force base in Alaska that I have my eye on. As far as I know, there's only two Air Force bases in Alaska. One is Elmendorf, which is, I'm not sure where they are, but the other one that I have my eye on, Elmendorf is the one that everyone knows of. It's huge and very well known. But there's another one called Clear Air Force Base, which is in the interior, I believe, near Fairbanks. And you can look it up on Google Maps. And it's relatively close to the HAARP facility. And my research indicates that the chemtrail spraying planes have probably followed the ionospheric heaters wherever they go, because to conduct experiments, it would be advantageous to have the airplanes taking off and landing and spraying in the vicinity of the ionospheric heater, you know, within, you know, let's say 500 miles or something like that. They may have a lot of hidden things there. I don't know. You know, it's hard to tell from Google Maps. And like I said, I don't have a lot of evidence for this. But, you know, they could have some facilities there that are highly automated and highly secret. They could be blotting things out on Google Maps. And, you know, maybe they have some type of thing that allows airplanes to, you know, drive into something underground, maybe. Underground facilities. I mean, the fact that we have underground facilities in this country, and our military has been very hard at work at digging underground bases is well documented, and I believe it's within the technical capabilities of our current military to build such a complex facility, and that would be my suggestion, because I think it would be advantageous to have a certain home base for the aircraft where, you know, they could be worked upon and replenished and things like this. And not only that, there's some evidence to this that it might be in Alaska as well. In William Thomas's book, Chemtrails Confirmed, he interviews somebody who is very familiar with air traffic in the British Columbia area. And this guy says that he sees the planes coming down from Alaska and spraying and then returning to Alaska later in the day. So, you know, and also Alaska is very, very strategically oriented on the globe. If you take a globe, I have a globe over there. If you take a globe and look at where Alaska is, it's almost equidistant from the contiguous 48 states to the most industrialized areas of Asia. You know, you've been seeing chemtrails over there in Japan, and then to Europe. It's very strategically located, and so the planes could be originating from Alaska and being hidden up there. You know, that would be a great place to hide them. I mean, you know, who wants to go to the middle of Alaska, right?
No offense to our Alaskan listeners, but I was just going to say, yes, that lines up with what William Thomas was reporting on two decades ago, almost, when he started really reporting on all of this. So that does make sense, but I appreciate the informed speculation that you bring to the table, because throughout the book, I think you make it clear that there are certain things that you are documenting. Here's the document, here's the facts, here are the people involved, and then there are other things that you were speculating on. And I noted a few of them as I was reading through the book. The proprietary aircraft of this new Manhattan project may be powered wirelessly and have no need for conventional jet fuel. evidence and logic suggest that these aircraft in the new Manhattan Project are operated remotely as drones. Have Hertzian antennas been strategically placed around the country and the world in a coordinated effort to modify the weather? Ionospheric heaters such as HARP may be used in conjunction with chemtrails to modify the weather. Chemtrails are probably sprayed to enhance the effectiveness of these operations. I've got a number of these that I've highlighted, and I think this speaks to the problem that is inherent to this research, which obviously... there is interest in geoengineering. There are various programs that are at work on this. There are whatever layers of secrecy and classified material that are going on under the surface that we do not have access to. We do have little bits and pieces from the public record and things that we can connect behind the scenes. But how do we juggle that problem of what is documentable and verifiable to what is informed speculation?
Yeah, the information... as pertaining to this project is just scattered to the four corners of the world, and I'm going around gathering up a little piece over here, a little piece over there, and trying to put it all back together, trying to re-engineer this thing. But I speak about the information in the frankest manner that I possibly can. I'm trying to stay true to my readers. I don't want to mislead my readers, and also I don't want to get sued. I don't want to, this is why you hear me prefacing things like they have developed technology which probably is used in today's New Manhattan Project and things, because I'm also saying that this is a mass murder operation. And, if I just go saying like, oh yeah, DARPA's behind it, oh yeah, MIT's behind it, oh yeah, it's the military and, it's these people and they're doing it. I mean, they could sue me for slander because they might be able to get away with it too, because they can just say, these things are not going to come out in court because they're classified. So I'm trying to stay out of court, and I'm trying to be true to the information.
It is a difficult line to walk, but as I say, you do provide so many different pieces of evidence that do add up in these various ways, some of which can be surprising even to people like myself who've looked at this subject in the past. For example, one thing that I noticed was that despite all of this talk about geoengineering that has become more and more common in congressional committees, and these types of hearings are being held on a regular basis, we have major prominent scientists speaking out about this. David Keith and others are going around pimping this idea everywhere they go. And yet, there is remarkably little research or even apparently interest in the medical or health effects, or at least potential effects, of stratospheric aerosol injection. And you pointed to a journal article that I hadn't seen from earlier this year, assessing the direct occupational and public health impacts of solar radiation management with stratospheric aerosols by Dr. F. Young and Netzel, which I'll put the link in the show notes for people who are interested. But it's interesting the way that they are talking about it in the abstract for this paper. They're saying, although much is being done to unravel the scientific and technical challenges around geoengineering, there have been few efforts to characterize the potential human health impacts of geoengineering, particularly with regards to SRM, solar radiation management approaches involving stratospheric aerosols. And this paper explores the information gap. So using available evidence, we describe the potential direct occupational and public health impacts of exposures to aerosols likely to be used for SRM. They're couching it in so many variables here because, of course, this is all theoretical and we don't know anything about it. But if you were to spray aluminum oxide aerosols or barium titanate or any of these other chemicals on people, it might be a really bad thing, as they end up concluding, although we don't know because no one's researching it. Can you speak to that, not just the health aspects of it, but the remarkable lack of interest in the potential health aspects of a new Manhattan Project?
Yeah, that paper you're referencing was a very significant development. It came out right before I released the biological impact, or it might have come out after, I forgot. Anyway, but that was the first really reputable, or the first actually of any study that I had ever seen pertaining to, what the biological impacts of these materials might be. And it was done by like PhD scientists from a reputable organization and all this stuff. But I would speculate, though, that actually the health impacts and the biological impacts have been studied extensively, but these studies have just not been made public. That would be what I assume has taken place, you know, because the biological impacts are what we've seen are grave. You know, this is mass murder. You know, and I make a case for that as far as Alzheimer's goes. We're talking hundreds of thousands of people who have died. These are extra deaths that have just suddenly popped up, you know, and we're supposed to go for a run or donate money to this or that and find a cure when what we really should be looking at is the cause. And so it's just layer upon layer of cover-up. And it's great that somebody is actually looking at this stuff, and not only is there evidence for the materials they're using being harmful to our health as part of the New Manhattan Project. Also, if you look at the history of the conventional cloud seeding industry, there's been a tremendous lack of research into just our exposure to silver iodide, which is what they use in the conventional cloud seeding industry. Of course, you know, their industry association says, oh, don't worry about it, you know, and then they cite all the information that says that, you know, it's not a problem and all this. But the bottom line is there has never been any long-term studies done as far as the biological impacts of silver iodide is concerned. So, I mean, you know, they've set a precedent as far as weather modification goes that they don't have to do long-term studies. They don't have to show us what's really going on here. And this is being repeated with the New Manhattan Project.
That's right. As you point out in the book, the best that you get even with the silver iodide, the conventional cloud seeding technologies, are impact studies on whether more or less rain will affect the ecosystem, generally speaking, but not the actual effect of the actual chemicals that are being used, which is, again, it's not surprising, I suppose, from the aspect of if people who are putting this plan into place obviously don't want people to concentrate on the potential health effects. But it is amazing that even after all of these parliamentary inquiries, the European Parliament talking about it, or the congressional committees on geoengineering, still no one thinks to ask, have you done a health impact assessment of this?
They're avoiding the most obvious question.
Exactly. All right. Obviously, way too much information in this book that we could possibly cover in a conversation like this. And I was particularly interested in some of the chapters on the fleet itself and the composition of it and how it's managed and put together and things of that nature. So we will direct people once again to your website, peteracirby.com, and also to the book itself, Chemtrails Exposed. So if they are interested, they can pursue this at greater length. You've had a lot of articles published up at Activist Post with various excerpts from the book. So again, people can look for some of your work there, and you're going to be making the rounds on all sorts of shows, I'm sure, in the coming weeks and months, talking about the book, so people can track your activity, I assume, at peteracirby.com?
peteracirby.com, that's probably the best place to go. I hope to be doing your show again many more times in the future, James. I really appreciate what you do.
All right, excellent. Thank you very much for your time, Peter, and good luck with the book.
Thank you very much.
The Corbett Report is brought to you by the Corbett Report subscriber. A weekly newsletter featuring James Corbett's International Forecaster editorial, recommended reading and viewing, discounts on Corbett Report DVDs, and once a month, a subscriber-only video. Sign up today to start receiving your copy at corbettreport.com/support.